Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Bondfinger, the only James Bond commentary podcast that can feel its E coming on right about now. I'm Nathan.
Oh, it's Dex for me. I'm Brendan.
And I'm a brimful plastic cup in a locker full of charm and vim and gratitude to Stuart Damon for this one.
And I'm having an argument with my pussy this episode.
Oh, James.
Oh, James. Oh,
Hermione.
We've started as we mean to finish. That's respectable for a wake, isn't it?
It is. So tonight we're watching, and those of you who have been paying attention to your podcatcher of choice, we're watching a thing called The Interrogation, which is Series 1, Episode
19.
I have 9 here, but that's clearly wrong. Episode 19, probably, of The Champions, which was first broadcast mere weeks before I entered the world in February the 5th, 1969 in the UK. Richard, why are we watching this?
Not long after in Australia. We're watching this because, interestingly, it carries on directly from To Trap a Rat with Saint Kate O'Mara, because they were forced to make this episode as Sam Wanamaker had blown the budget for the next 3 stories with his creative filming techniques and precision detailing. Go back to our Kato Marathon if you want to relive that one. But mostly we're doing this because lovely Stuart Damon, extra star of Space 1999 and, gosh, many other things, was also, you know, this was meant to be his rocket launching career in 67. He was given the part without an audition because he was playing Houdini on the West End, all singing, all dancing. He was indeed the Hugh Jackman of his age. And our very own Dennis Spooner saw it and wrote the part for him. And, of course, Mr. Damon passed away just a few months ago. So we just wanted to say thank you. And, you know, a great childhood friend to many of us, huge hit in Australia, and indeed Nyssa of Trakan's favourite actor when she was a young person.
Oh, he is very pretty, so it's absolutely understandable. Yes. And it's nice to see. It is actually quite nice that the other two weird-looking regulars are kind of sidelined in this one. All right. Well, with that in mind, I think that there's no reason why we shouldn't get started. So, gentlemen, do you have your fingers poised on the play button?
We do.
I do.
Okay.
We do. Should we warn the listener of what they're about to dive into?
So, yeah.
As it's not a jolly romp.
No, it's not. Yeah. It is.
It's not the usual.
No. But it does have, we will get into it when it's on, but it does have some DNA in common with some of the things that we've done on Bondfinger before.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
And the critics loved it, and it's a fan favourite as well. But it was also showed that Damon had the range.
Yeah. He does some actual acting here. Yeah. All right. Okay. So our code word, a code word that really represents the one question that was on my mind throughout the entire episode, really. The code word for tonight is toilet. And the next time I say that word, I want you all to press play. So here we go. 3, 2, 1, toilet. And
it's
off.
It's really the TARDIS dunny, isn't it? Because you never see it. You should
you
there.
Never see it. See, I was
right
really
up his
worried.
Nose.
Straight
so, up
Richard,
his nose.
is this from a previous episode? Is that what's happening here?
Well, the reason
is this
we've
the pilot?
Seen, yeah, the reason we've seen this episode is because there was no money, so they got a few old flats and a bit of tat from Ken Adams' garage sale, and put together a sort of knockoff Doctor No spider room set, and a lot of flats, and then used a lot of X footage from. Yes, this is from the beginning, the launch episode. But as we said in the last take on the on. Sorry, I need to start again. As we were saying on our last coverage of the Champions with the delightful Kato Mara, the reason that episode looked so good is that it used three times its budget and time in its shooting. So we have a lovely cupboardy affair in this one. Isn't he gorgeous? Russian Jewish parents. He was born in the US. He is a native New Yorker. An ex showroom display mannequin for Fletcher Jones, as in they all are. Really. They're very pretty,
except
aren't
for,
they?
Yeah.
And don't they
except
make fun of
William Gaunt?
Oh, he's beautiful.
And slack jawed.
Anthony Nichols was both not pretty enough and too drunk to appear in the titles.
Oh, I actually think, well, I have several friends who find him extremely charming. He was 68 when he did this.
Oh, okay. He looks great then.
I know. It's ridiculous. Mind you, they covered him in fake fur and makeup.
Yes. Yes.
And this is also...
This is all from previous episode?
Yeah, he's already on drugs.
Episode.
He's already on drugs. Why would you be... Sorry?
It is Goldfinger.
Yeah, why would you be playing golf with... Well, here she goes. She's like, I just want to hit some brown people. So this is what they all do for sport. He, you know, this one of them plays golf. She whacks tinted folk, and this one pretends to run over children and then stops. It's a kind of chicken
whenever
game.
Whenever I see William Gaunt, I want him to close his mouth because there are flies about. You know, like that's kind of
weird. You're only taunting us because you know how much we adore him. It's because you can't bear but to kiss him in those limpid eyes. How many fucking pencils do you need? A very early appearance by Peter Davison in costume. Yes.
It's Kylie Minogue cosplaying Peter Davison.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. There's Will Baker frottaging behind that big map.
I thought that was Will Baker.
I'd like to do the first thing I possibly can to spoil this, which is we'll discover later in the episode that secrecy is a big thing that Nemesis are concerned about. So why do they have a whacking great sign out the front that says Nemesis on it? It's like, what, are we Nemesis air conditioning technicians? That's a bit of overkill.
Yes.
Greeting card salesman.
It's the same reason that ASIO was designed with full frontal glass in Canberra, the Australian Symposium for Interested Observers, or whatever they actually call themselves. But, yeah, the architect's tenet was that, well, they're going to know we exist and they're going to look for us, so if we put on a big show, they'll think that we're benign.
Yeah,
but actually, we're loosening... We're obviously looking at beautiful William Gaunt loosening the teeth of our operatives on a regular basis.
Mm.
He is very pretty, and I really love how Tremaine is doing every creative young man's Captain Haddock fantasy.
He really is.
Yeah. We're about to see one of the best actors of his generation, and it was an absolute bloody coup to get him for this. And the reason that this was still a standard budget, despite the sets, is that there's a certain performer called Colin Blakely who started with the RSC in 1961 and was not exactly mates but certainly friendly with Diana Rigg.
I did take the opportunity to just look at his IMDb profile, and it's classy stuff. He didn't slum it in the sort of shit that we normally watch at all. Like,
which is why he's not in a Bond film, yeah.
That's right. He's really very good indeed in this too. And so that's how I like to think of him, he's Craig.
That's how I wake up after every podcast next morning.
Sweating under a pulsing energy drone. Yes.
Yeah. Moist and unable to remember the night before.
Yeah.
So I'm getting very big Blake 7 The Way Back vibes from this room and elements of this. So
I'm getting
Dennis Spooner was sitting in on pre-production meetings of The Prisoner, but and he said that was his. He wanted to do a Prisoner type episode because he, as he said, he believed that Stuart Damon deserved the coverage and could play it and deserved to be a big star. They really thought his career was going to rocket. And there's Ken Adams' garage sale right there.
It's actually a good set. It's not a terrible set. And they're shooting it with, what, a fisheye lens or something just to kind of slightly disorient us.
A TV's own Panaflex, yeah. It's beautiful. It's beautifully done. Also, we've got to remember it was seen on 4x3 on smaller screens and generally not in colour. But, yeah, lovely angles. It looks very much the foreshortening that is stylistically of the time. Damon later said that he played it. He was, anyway, to cut a reasonably long liturgy short, he was pilloried for being very wooden in this. They all were. I don't think the direction really helps. But he said, I played it stylistically because that's what the part required, and that was the tone of the times, and that was very much. And if you look at it, you can see, I can see actually what you're doing. Your movements are very stylized, a little arch. Anyone who's a fan of Doctor Who animated reconstructions would no doubt pick up on that. And honestly, their budget was so low they couldn't even afford laundry for the shirts.
It's interesting you say he was wooden. He looks lacquered to me in this scene.
I actually think, too, it's a little bit refreshing to have this happen where it's not spelled out. Do you know what I mean? To not have it spelled out. Oh, he's very sweaty. It's obviously not 20 degrees. He even kind of does a little cheers thing to the thermometer when he puts, just before he puts the water in the cupboard.
The plastic beaker. Like there's,
So he's going to escape through this ventilation shaft. That's what's happening.
We know that's going to happen. Nice view. This is from a case for Lemmings.
This integration
really hurt. Yes.
The integration of this footage is so good, because when I was researching this episode, like, I've seen three episodes of The Champions before, and when I read online, this episode extensively uses footage from past episodes, and I kind of thought, oh, we're doing a clip show. That's a bit weird, but it doesn't feel like a clip show. It feels like he's remembering things, which makes sense.
I actually thought that it was real.
Yeah.
I thought they'd shot it all specially for it. I had no idea that this was that these were clips until you just said it, basically. So it all seemed much more expensive to me than it turns out it actually was.
It was actually a very expensive show. It wasn't going to be made unless they could get US backing. And we talked about this last time. It was Lou Grade's greatest triumph in selling an entire series to NBC sight unseen. They hadn't even made it yet, but they bought it on the back of Dennis Spooner, the synopsis, and Stuart Damon, whom they really liked.
Wonderful.
And we forget that he was, even though, you know, there wasn't the same press, but running a full West End show on your own in a 6-foot spider web casing cocoon thing as Harry Houdini was very difficult. John Pertwee had a small part as a cleaning lady. This is the lovely Colin Blakely shot through silk. It's in his contract because he smoked a lot, so he always had to have a diffuse thing. He's 37 in this.
Genre fans may recognize him from the year before. As terrorizing Emma Peel in a helicopter in Murdersville,
he's very good in that.
Yeah, and it's kind of the last episode that Diana Rigg recorded in a way. She did return to record the Forget Me Not, but sort of under duress. But yeah, it is considered one of the classics. But he's very different in that. He's a lot
inches of duress. Yeah.
He's very different in this. He's a lot more sinister in this because he's still.
He knew how to play it. His oeuvre is remarkable. I think they make a very nice duality, and I'd like to think that Damon was filtering his performance of the hot to the cold. If they both underplayed it, it could have been quite staid.
Yes.
And also he was told, you're here to pitch to the Americans, so act like you're an American. He said, well, I am an American. He said, no, you're an American working in British theatre and British TV. Forget you're working for us. do this as if you're in an American show. And that was a nice little contrast to the rest of them. Oh, very professional. Also, I think his hair's lovely.
He does have lovely hair. Like,
look at, he's Russian bottom. Jewish and grew up with nothing. You know, they had to share a pair of shoes when he was very young. So, he's, you know, I think there's something about that that makes you a good actor. It's called hunger and thievery. You have to steal every scene.
That looks like a prosthetic ear.
What works here is that we absolutely don't know anything. Like, at no point are we aware when lies are being told. We don't know that him overhearing this conversation is planned or not. You know, when Craig says he's never heard of Retford, is it Retfield?
Yes.
Like, he's never heard Retford. Like, we don't know whether that's true or not, or whether he's hiding things. Like, at no point are we sort of let in on what's going on until the very end. And I think it's clever. Like, I think that's super effective.
It's nicely done as a nod to Len Deighton. It wasn't Patrick McGoohan who first threw the viewer a wobbly, as in, we don't know whose side they're on. We don't know whose side the interrogator's on, because I think really Ipcris played the same lines and there were so many double agents. But it's quite, oh, he's in a big, lovely white ball. He looked lovely.
I think Ipcris is another kind of relevant kind of touch point for this, isn't it?
I think a blatant rip-off is another term you could use. I was
trying to be nice.
You're always lovely. Do you know where this show came from? Do you know why we have the champions? Did we ever talk about it? Dennis Spooner.
Tibet.
Yes, well, exactly. Dennis Spooner had was fresh out of Doctor Who and looking for a vehicle with his mate Bob Baker, because, you know, they'd worked on The Saint and made some money, Bob Baker had. So he said, all I've ever wanted to do is film The Amazing Incredible Wilson. Doesn't that captivate just by the title? It's a it's a comic in which, well, very popular in the time, according to Dennis Spooner anyway. It's a comic strip character from The Wizard publication, in which a chap who's, what can I say about him? Anyway, it's a chap who's a hermit, and he had a very abstemious life, and he could apparently overcome tremendous odds due to the nature of his exceptional physical prowess and stamina. So he thought, and Dennis Spooner thought, well, I shall have some of that. And he wanted to shove this in, you know, as an homage to the male nude. And, of course, everyone said, no, you can't. You've got to shove a girl in as well. Of course, you can't do it anyway. And he couldn't get the rights because they told him to naff off, because we're a 2-bit 5P comic and you can't have our stuff. So, anyway, they did this instead, and I think we're more much better off for it. And it was the first three-handed game. It was the first spy-fi fantasy shtick thing that actually had a lady lead along with a boy lead. Apparently the Avengers doesn't count, so.
Well, it was only
there
two.
There you go. It was only
so,
two.
And is there Italian money in this? Why is
Because it feels like Space 1979.
No, it's because of the female lead is Italian, isn't she?
Well, no, she's English. She grew up in Sussex.
No, does she? She seems to have an Italian name.
They had two. Yes, I know. It's very disconcerting, isn't it? They had two other ladies they were looking at. Annette Andre, a star of she's in The Persuaders and The Prisoner, and apparently she was Australian. Anyway, and Randall and Hopkirk deceased. And that was the producer's favourite. She's a lovely, happy-go-lucky blonde type. There's that frickin' gin. It's too much ice. And the lovely Ilona Rogers, whom we know from other shtick, and Alexandra Bastedo, who was only 20, and her only other film at this point of any note was Casino Royale, where she played a Bond girl, which is why we're allowed to do this.
Oh, okay.
She was Meg,
and is
Meg
her
the Destroyer.
Hair her own?
Ah, it's a fall, sadly. NBC chose her. NBC yes. says you right. shall so, have her because so she's the tallest and prettiest.
If she wasn't in this, would we be doing it as part of FTE because it's got William Gaunt in it?
Yes. I suppose.
Yes.
Yes.
William, yes. Well, I'm not quite gaunt yet.
Yeah.
Give me another 20 years.
He really is rough looking. I tell you what, he does look...
With Craig yeah, with anyway. His dirty old man coat.
It's Craig is very pretty. Yeah.
The man.
Have you noticed the body like... What?
The man is very rough looking.
The man. Well, we still don't know which side they're on. Have you noticed that they're mimicking each other's body language?
Dialogue as well, like they were doing each other's dialogue earlier. James, can you get me a drink, darling?
Yes, darling, just the
I
one.
I can't even open my own.
He's unused to wine, dear listener, James was telling us earlier.
I'm drinking teen Beverly pregnancy Crusher. Drink.
Alco Pops. very popular with the kids.
So I just want to, while we're talking about Stuart Damon, the first thing I saw him in, and it is rather interesting, it was an episode of UFO he did called Mindbender.
Yes.
Where the roles are reversed, and he's essentially playing the interrogator to Ed Bishop, Commander Straker, and it does a very sinister, almost Joker-esque job of it. But I do have to say, like I said, I've only seen three episodes of the Champions before this, and with the greatest of respect to Kate O'Mara, this is the first one that makes me want to watch the rest of them. Like, this is really... I think I didn't get Stuart Damon until I watched this.
Well, but I get this him is the now. Only one that he uses facial expressions. See,
I quite enjoyed him as the final serial of season 8 of Doctor Who.
No, I have no idea what that means.
Nope. Sorry.
Oh, Damon, sorry.
Oh!
Oh, dear. Oh, James.
Evo Everway, James.
I just finished watching it this week during lunch.
Oh, dear me. But dear old Stuart, he was acting right up until 2013, where he was still reprising his role in General Hospital as Dr. Yes, Alan Quatermain.
That's right, fresh from King Solomon's Mines. That's where he made his money. And he was much loved.
Yeah,
much loved. Was chipping away at the part he was. Yes,
I found out he did almost 400 episodes from 1977 to 2013.
Much like
had
this
he
podcast,
died, yeah. like it, had he been decapitated in a car accident, and then he came back in 2013 or something?
I
like,
wish.
Put his brain in someone else's body.
I don't actually know.
Soaps work, I think.
It looks like he was a regular until about 2008. He was a regular... He had a few regular stints, basically. Mainly the 80s, and then he came back in the 2000s. There you go.
Right. He was the Paul Robinson of General Hospital.
He was.
Sure.
Yeah.
The telling thing, did they ever do this to him in General Hospital? Just to stick him in a ward and ask him where he'd been? And
I'm sure they must have done
bits of his earlier episodes.
Yeah.
You can have him possessed by the devil like Marlena in Days of Our Lives.
Oh, if only. Yeah. I've got a question for the team. Why did the Bond pictures, or indeed the novels, because the novels went partway there, they were too busy. Ian Fleming was having too much fun torture porning Bond in every bloody situation he could anyway. But you kind of wonder, why was Roger Moore never put through this? Just because a dark part of me really wants to see that happen.
Oh, can I just say Bert Kwok is really hot? Like, ridiculously. Look at that. Whoa.
He'd shoot you like he wants to kill you.
Yeah.
In the face. I'd
take it happily. Yes. why we never did this to Rog? Because I think part of Rog's
too nice.
Of Rog's shtick is not acting. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's retired from acting during that period, and so this is absolutely an acting part. Like, it lives and dies on whether
There's two,
Damon is convincing in this sort of two-part thing. I'm not paying attention to this bit now that I know it's just a clip from the pilot.
This is Felix Aylmer.
Oh, Gandalf.
This is Felix Aylmer, who made an entire career out of playing old people.
Seriously, that's all he did.
Kenneth Williams used to lampoon Felix Aylmer on Round the Horn and as the old voice. What can I say about Stuart? Look, it's just that this hyper-realism, this notion of that we've got this premise and it's all pretty much in a fantasy because everything is so perfect and the missions always work out well. We always end up on top. We have a lovely time. We put on gorgeous outfits and we leave the room together smiling is completely upturned in this one. And it's a really interesting use of the three-handed game in that the other two, with all their superpowers and all of their interesting abilities in both telepathy and precognition, are standing by utterly gormless and speechless and useless and allowing one of them to go through this, which we then realize, not to throw in a spoiler, that we find out whose side the interrogator is on, and of course it makes it worse.
Now, this is the bit where I felt the need for a toilet, because why does he have a waste paper basket? Like, is he throwing the first drafts of documents out in it?
I think
you've
answered your own question there.
Oh, you think he's shitting in the waste paper
basket?
Is it
like in Searching for Sean Connery, where you
piss in the sink,
where you use it and then you throw the toilet paper in the basket?
Like in Greece.
Yeah.
No, it's that famous scene where Noel Coward came in on Sean Connery in a dressing room and Connery was pissing in the sink.
We've all done it. One of the things that I thought was refreshing about this was a refreshing lack of their stupid superpowers. And this is really the only time they occur. Like, I'm assuming that this is, he's got the magical power. He's got power over hinges or something given to him by a Tibetan monk.
The plot certainly hinges on this.
And you're expecting it, and it's still a shock when it happens.
I wasn't expecting it.
You weren't?
Oh, no, I think I was. Yeah. I think I was, because I do remember, because it's his facial expression. Like, we see his reaction to the fact that there's a brick wall behind there for a few seconds before we actually see the brick wall itself. And you're right, there is an inevitability to it, because it can't end this way, can it? It can't end with him just tearing the door down and escaping. That's too boring.
I would have loved to have seen them done a series two, but everyone just went on to other things. It was actually very successful, but I'd love to see them do the same thing to the female lead of sorts, maybe in a different environment, but they would never risk that. It's still meant to be a Stuart Damon vehicle. But there's so much betrayal in this between the team members and all the rest. I think the saddest thing for a narrative is that because it's made for syndication, we don't get to see the ramifications of this between the other two.
The thing is, all these ITC adventure series, Lou Gray series, did only tend to get one season before being replaced by something rather similar but with different actors, and it was the actors who made it different. And, you know, famously there were cases of Terry Nation using the same scripts on different shows and just, you know, scrubbing out the Baron and writing in Simon Templar.
Changing the name to Tarrant.
That was Dennis Spooner's own show, and yes, they definitely did do that. And this was meant to be a completely fresh take on the medium with all new scripts and all new ideas, even though it's the Ipcress file. But yeah.
Now, of course, in that example I just gave, The Saint ran for, what, six series over 8 years or something. So that's the exception.
Hundreds of stories, yeah.
874 years.
That's a very long time. Yes.
It's interesting that this was seen to be cutting edge in a darker medium right from the start, that Spooner had talked to George Markstein, who was the script editor and, in fact, creative influence on The Prisoner, when he talked about a genuine prison camp for, well, a retirement home prison camp for elderly spies in Scotland. That was the impetus for the prisoner. But Spooner apparently wanted to make something on the same level. Apart from this episode, I don't really see it happening. But then I do know the Champions quite well. It was pretty much in continuous run in the UK till 77, and then it had a reboot in 84, then again in the 90s, and then subsequently on DVD. So it's pretty much always been around. We had it in Australia in the early 70s and not back again until the 90s. 1990, it was replayed.
So did you watch it in the 70s, Richard? Like, this was something you watched?
It was on, but I don't remember it. It's one of my mother's favourite shows. But very, very popular, and it was considered stylish and avant-garde. And oddly, it was, from what I read, considered a lot more realistic than the other shows. I can't see how.
Well, they have magic powers, just like in real life.
But if you look at what else was on, Department S, you know, the Baron, as you say, the Saint, the fact that they are in peril or placed in, and this feels like genuine peril. This isn't fake genuine peril. This is, I'm sweating and I am uncomfortable. And we have to remember that they're all from the Strasbourg School. Well, Damon was, so you know, he's definitely making real. But I don't think any of this would have worked without Colin Blakely. Even though maybe he's as mannerly as Damon in his own way, the way he clutches his forehead and poses about and dressed like some rough job from the Wild One. He looks like he's come over to pump up Marlon Brando's spare tire, doesn't he? he wishes.
But, I mean, there's something about making the environment real. Like, the sweat makes the environment real in a way. Do you know what I mean? The heat and the stress and all of that. And in the previous episode we saw, you know, they were just very in control and you didn't see them on the back foot. Like, I think...
Exactly,
So this is a big departure, isn't it? It is.
Very much so. It's got the accolades. It was the one they then touted as, oh no, we meant to do this all the time. And of course, it was just a quick flip. Some of the best stories are made under duress, aren't they? It's the same in Doctor Who, and you might say it's the same in Bond. Spy Who Loved Me was made under similar circumstances, even though it had a lot of cash on it, but everyone was suffering. And I think it's one of the most fun.
And I'll be doing the Spy Who Loved Me podcast.
Exactly.
We've done it.
Casino Royale's overdue, I'd say. Sure.
Yeah, why haven't we done that? That's crazy. We should do one of those.
Isn't it coming out in cinemas this October or something?
Oh, my God. When is that film ever going to air?
October, apparently.
Are we ever going to see it?
Isn't that like 2 years late or something?
Yeah, we still won't be allowed out of the house by October.
No.
Distribution company, is it?
I don't know. Who does MGM here? I sort of like that Colin Blakely, or rather the character, has shifted his performance to I'm a very frustrated person behind a desk and you haven't filled in your license form correctly. For goodness sake, let's get it right, please.
He's kind of giving angry council worker.
It's a really clever three persona performance on that line. Yeah, that they've gone from aggressor to now to supplicant, and the repeating and the rapidity of the lines, the way that they're matching speed now. This is very interesting.
Well, we don't know whether that tape's real. We've got no way of knowing.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. What kind of performance did you say it was, James?
Frustrated council worker.
Yes.
I have your form. We have received it. I have stamped it. We have reviewed it.
Signed in triplicate.
The 60s was obsessed. Sorry, we've talked about this before, haven't we? The 60s
there
was obsessed.
Fort Tremaine's. Sorry.
Oh my goodness. He kept asking me about lights.
Sorry, Richard, what were you saying?
No, I didn't notice that before. Patrick Stewart probably stole everything from this. The 60s obsessions with drugs,
yep.
with losing control, with losing sense of self, with being undermined, with being a false self. It's even in John Lennon's, you know, one of his few works of poetry and fiction, A Spaniard in the Works. He touches on the same thing. And, of course, The Doors, Jim Morrison was obsessed with Aldous Huxley and the writings of the altered self or the split self. Oh, here we go.
Here we go.
Anyone who's done home renovations knows how much this is suffering.
It's so good, isn't it?
It's so good. Is,
yeah.
But how could they have not known, oh, do we blow the powder? How could they have not known that it's in the same freaking building and two doors down from Tremaine's fabulous revolving map room?
Well, they've never been in that part of the building.
The doors just marked
round the corridor next to the loo.
The doors marked caretaker's closet. They've never been in there.
That's it.
Am I the only one that's getting a little bit of homoerotic frisson from Mr. Blakely?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah, no, he wants it. Yeah,
especially with all that gagging.
Something nasty in his cup. Yes, I'd spit it out too. Don't you swallow that, darling.
It tastes salty.
It's...
Oh...
Oh, no.
This is where he tells them, did you know that whale milk is actually like toothpaste, Mr. Sterling? It's thick and creamy so that it can withstand the currents. Oh, that's it. I'm going to pass out. Back in Canberra.
Are we? Yes, where are we? Are we Geneva?
Geneva. No, she went of her own accord.
Thank Yay. You.
And here comes Alexandra Bastedo as her own green screen. Go on.
I was using my new green screen last week, and I was very tempted to put on my green polo shirt and just fuck around.
You should call it Alexandra.
Yeah, OnlyFans is gone now. There's no point.
Oh no! They've reversed that because they actually looked at how much money they would lose.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wasn't it all about the new sort of anti-sex trafficking laws though? Yeah, so how are they getting around
something
that?
About that?
We don't care about sex trafficking.
Well, sex trafficking is always just code for sex workers and fundamentalist Christians being cross at them.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Now, I think this is incredibly good, but I do think this depiction of 60s Hong Kong is very racist.
Why?
Because there's all the Chinese riding and Chinese people in the rickshaws. I think it's a stereotype.
Pan Am 707. Sorry.
But wasn't it shot there?
Yeah, no, it was. I'm sorry. One of the things is, right, that I thought, I didn't know this was a clip show, and so I actually spent a lot of time kind of thinking I should be paying close attention to what these flashbacks are because there's probably some clue to what's going on, but I know that I won't bother to do that. So, and now I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I took that approach. But I do think this is actually pretty good.
I love his like wide-eyed schoolboy kind of acting whilst when he's being hypnotized and remembering all this.
Mm.
It's very mannered. But
is he
bunging
it on? We don't know. Is he?
But stylistically, it's also very stagey and it's very mannered. They used to call it naturalistic. Remember, we've talked about this before. But and he copped a lot of flack for it. The actor did in the series received criticism for it. But I can see why he's doing it. Maybe creatively it's a puzzling choice and you wouldn't do it this way, but also it's 1967 and I don't know. I can see two sides for the performance. If he had wanted to be a Bond, he never would have been considered for the part because he's too actorly. You know, they were always looking for...
Unlike Roger.
People who couldn't
well, Roger never actually descended into acting, did he?
That's the point.
No, but he did have a good line in actorliness, though.
Actorliness. Yeah, and yet Connery was completely naturalistic. And the reason both Damon and Connery got the parts is because they hadn't... They'd only done very minimal film work before. It's the same reason
they
that
were just
Saltzman
pretty.
Yeah, Saltzman and Broccoli wanted someone very fresh that wouldn't be an affected performer. He wouldn't be, although he, you know, he'd done three films, as far as I know.
I wonder this also if his sort of more stiff performance is, you know, you look around the landscape at the time, you've got Patrick McGowan being very sort of almost
so
a bullion
as
Danger Man. You know, you've got Rog being the saint. You've got Patrick McNee being the man about town. What does that leave you? Well, that leaves you be they're all quite sort of loose and relaxed and really confident. So you play it a bit more wry, I think I would describe. So Craig is very wry, whereas Richard, as in the character in this, is very sort of uptight and wound very tightly, but occasionally they both have a bit of fun, like we saw in the Kato Mari episode. So I'm getting a better appreciation of what this series is trying to do.
Otherwise, you're left with playing Don Adams. I mean, that's really the only other choice you've got, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. And all these characters are far too competent.
He is.
So pretty. It was deliberately done, though, to be a very loose and fresh style. They brought Cyril Frankel in, who'd been working on The Saint and other programs, for his ability to relax the actors on set and bring out that sense of bonhomie. Yeah, this is where it gets a bit like, some of those films you've shown us, Nathan, when no one else was around.
That's it.
Yeah, the ones written by Pip and Jane Baker. Yeah.
Well, you're in your blue room now, aren't you?
I am. No, this is FTE Studios.
No more. But it's an interesting question. Connery would have played it flatly and bluntly and truthfully. This fella's playing it. I like to think that the performance is about the character assuming a false self out of self-protection.
Mm.
But it's another boundary for the interrogator to have to penetrate. So many extra layers means more work for them before they can get to himself, which I'm assuming is a technique you'd use when you're interrogated. I haven't been interrogated for a while, not like this.
I think, though, oh, wow.
That was
okay,
chilling,
so
wasn't
look,
it? Yeah, that's really
it
chilling.
It was, but, like, I'm not sure. There's something coming up which makes me think that he is actually genuinely drugged at this point and he's not
and
trying
he
to lead him on because, you know, you suspect that when he's pretending to be on the rickshaw or whatever, he's trying to make the interrogator think, am I right? That's what I thought. That
I think
exactly
it's deliberately
right.
Ambiguous, yeah.
Yeah. But the way
exactly
I was reading
right.
It was he was on top and he was tricking the interrogator at this point. But in a moment, we're going to discover that he didn't realize the interrogator was in the room with him. So he sees the footprint, which we've had him look at the interrogator's shoes in the very first scene. And so he sees the footprint, so he realizes the interrogator's been in the room with him, so he knows that there's a door.
Yeah.
Right? So that means that he didn't know that that was real at this point. I think, like... Oh, I'm dropping things. I think there's a sense in which there's slightly less to this than meets the eye now that I know that it's a clip show. Do you know what I mean?
The thing is, it's not a clip show in the traditional sense. Like, IMDb describes it as using extensive use of clips, and it's not extensive at all. Like, it's maybe 10% of the running time, which, you know, that's not a clip show. That's a flashback.
Yeah.
You know, you might as well accuse Doctor Who Journey's End of being a clip show.
It's so true. Every 60s...
the world's greatest clip show.
Every 60s serial show had a clip show, and sometimes two even in one season, simply as a way to get 30 episodes in.
Mm. It's like a Dr. Light episode.
Yes.
Yeah, literally.
It's a William Gaunt Light episode.
It suffers for that, I agree.
No, he's weird looking. I'm happy not to have to look at him. That's it. It's just very lightly painted over by the set dresser.
Would you press the red button?
Why would you leave button in the room?
Well, in case the bloke you're interrogating tries to strangle you, I would imagine.
It was a totes David Tennant moment, wasn't it?
And it's like, shit, this is my office.
Because it even has the same decor. Like, it's got the same green paint.
Literally, there's the fucking dunny. I walk past this door every frickin' day. You bitches.
And also, he's coming through the other door in Tremaine's office, not the sliding door. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Ah, well, that's the thing. He hasn't come in through the door he always comes in through.
He's come through the back passage.
Yes.
But do you think he would have been super cross? You know, like he's been shitting into a waste paper basket for like a whole week.
He's smearing his feces all over the walls.
Well, he knows that the toilet is just down the, you know, second on the left, on the way out of Tremaine's office.
The killer has scrawled.
I can't see Tremaine and not think of that wall. Big eagle thing in Danger 5.
They are very hurry high pants, aren't they?
They are.
Do you know what this is, Sarah? 3 stars and a spider. 3 stars. What? Oh, no, 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 no. 3 stars.
So there's something you may want to edit out for inappropriateness.
That you can't edit it out, so don't say it, James. It's a commentary.
I was quoting the first episode of Psychoville.
Ah.
Oh, okay.
Appropriate.
Mm. Now, I have to say, because we're about to get the reveal of what this is about, this is where the episode does fall apart a little bit for me, because why aren't the other two being interrogated in the same way?
Mm.
Because he's a man, and William Gaunt is like a little sort of gay Englishman gorgeous with a pixie. funny face, and she's a lady. He's the lead, so he's being interrogated.
Right,
he's being paid danger money.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Gull, whatever his face, didn't fucking get. You know, like Deanna, and ask her how many lights there were, for God's sake.
I feel like you're very interested in interior decorating.
That's right. I think he couldn't take us seriously in a little slut suit, as it was officially called, until they put her in a real uniform. Colin Blakely also, we didn't realise, is more Sontaran than actor, isn't he? He's quite
very short. He's not quite a tall man.
No, he's Brendan scale. He's not short.
That's very short. To be fair,
he's powerfully centered in his gravitas.
You'd think that would help me not fall over, but it doesn't.
And here we go. You bitch.
Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of thing, and it did strike me at the time because I was pretty aware that this was not in any way serialized, and so I knew that this would go literally nowhere, and then the next episode they'd all be stiff as boards again and kind of working together.
Yeah. You know?
They do talk about that, though, in the end. That's a lovely denouement scene coming up.
Mm. And also, I think Alexandra Bastedo has been given the day off. Or she's off running around the streets with Kate O'Mara, one of the two.
No, she's wearing that green dress, but you can't see her because she's been peed out.
She's actually against the wall.
Yeah. Behind William Gaunt, they're completely invisible.
Mm.
Well, that taught William Gaunt.
I have read a theory that this was intended to be the season finale and ergo series finale if we didn't get a second season, but it was then run as episode 19. So that obviously didn't happen. But
that would have been really interesting.
Yeah. But also in this bit, they're like, yeah, there's something weird about him, but he gets results. It's like, didn't he just pull a metal wall off a metal door off the wall? Do we want to ask about that?
With his bare hands.
Did you give him Weet-Bix or something? I don't know.
It was the drugs. It was crystal meth.
It was the drugs.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. No, it really was.
Oh, that's why he's bothering the horses. I understand now.
Oh, dear.
As we're watching this, folks, I've actually typed out the subtitles for this, and I'm just noticing random capitals I've put in places. I do apologise.
It was 3 a.m. in the morning.
Subtitles. The subtitles are actually somewhat better than the original dialogue in some cases. Mind you, a lot of swearing for a 60s show, Brendan. I didn't expect that.
I know. Well, you know, I did that thing where you just replace a vowel with a swear word. It's great. Not a vowel.
Right.
No. A whole vowel. Every vowel.
Right. Every vowel is replaced with a different swear word. Yeah, the subtitles are long, but they are fruity. Yeah.
And it was only at a very late stage that I decided to add whirring when the doors opened. but yeah, you're right, Richard.
I thought that was the flush of his trousers.
This is the scene that kind of goes, yeah, we know we may have episodes after this, so let's address the fact that this is an occupational hazard, that your mates might lock you in a room and make you shit in a bucket.
Ends with the immortal words, let us never speak of this again.
The interrogator died on the way back to his home planet.
Yes, quite. terribly jolly. And Stuart Damon is very pretty and very does some pretty. Actual acting here.
Hmm.
What were you going to say, James?
I wonder if they named Archer after him.
Yeah, I was wondering hair. That too.
I think probably, yeah.
It has started again, hasn't it, Archer?
Just today, yes. I believe.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't think they need to keep going with that now that we've lost Jessica.
Mm.
Well, I was going to say now the reality's surpassed it, but yeah.
Yeah, well, that too.
That photo is bloody terrifying of Tremaine, can I just say?
Yeah. And what a scary, scary man.
The only thing I can
tell
think
you,
of-
it gave a lot of very young bear, proto-bear admirers some very rich and stirring thoughts in their youth. I have this on reliable reportage. Well, that was a heap of fun, wasn't it?
I was going to say that photo of Tremaine may have been a tribute to the photo of Baylock from the end of Star Trek, but of course Star Trek hadn't gone out in the UK by this stage, so it's just Anthony Nichols being terrifying.
Only just.
He's just looked under his desk and he realised that Craig swapped bins.
Yeah, that's right. He's got that waste paper basket now. Well, does anyone have any sort of closing statements, I guess, is really the only thing that I have left to say.
I want to watch the rest of the show now. Not as a podcast, but I want to watch the rest of the show.
Yeah, I feel it's closest to the Bond films of any of the episodes of this, and we know that it, like many other series, was made on the back of Bond's success.
Yeah.
But this one explores, well, come on, it's Len Dayton, really. But it's just looking at, well, you know, just how much are you willing to sacrifice for your bloody job? Because I think by the end of this, I'll be going, you know, yes, holiday perks, yes, nice super, yes, I get days in lieu. But you know what? You're a fucking asshole. I don't think I want to work with you.
and I have magical powers so that I can just sort of go into a bank and say, hand over all the money.
I can go and play off Exactly. I can go and play golf better than Tiger Woods, who's not even born yet. So you can all get stuffed.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I'd be doing that.
Yep. Mm. Yep. That's my plan when I get back from Tibet.
Are you going to get stitched up in Tibet? Are you thinking?
No, I'm not leaving the house. It's a whole thing.
No.
Well, James, do you have anything that you need to tell us?
No.
James was gripped by that one.
And do we have any extravagant future plans? We are going to continue doing this again, despite all reason and sense.
Yeah.
I found some new things to watch recently.
Like what, James?
Well, a friend suggested this series called OSS 117, which is kind of the French proto James Bond. The books that it's based on were actually written a few years before Fleming wrote the Bond books. And they've recently made some new films in the last sort of decade or so. And they're kind of French spy comedy films. Yeah.
That could be fun. Mm. That could be a thing. Well, that could be a rich new vein for us to explore, I guess. Yeah.
We all have to quickly learn French.
And there's a new one coming out this year.
Yeah, well, okay. All right. Well, in that case, until next time, remember that your boss will drug and imprison and torture you on the slightest pretext unless you do everything you can to stop them. Thank you very much for listening and good night.
Good night.
Ta-ta.
And from fingering with love.
Oh, love.
Okay.